19, The Roaring Twenties and the Great Depression. Chapter Preview, Terms, Inflation, Martial Law, Ku Klux Klan, Petrochemicals, Barnstormer, Partisan, Indict, Great Depression, Credit, Stock Market, New Deal, Subsidy, Collective Bargaining, Dust Bowl, Shelter Belt. People: Duncan McIntyre, Paul Braniff, Wiley Post, Will Rogers, Mary Alice Robertson, John C. Walton, William H. Murray, Woody Guthrie, E. W. Marland, Leon Phillips. Places: Burbank, Talent. The war to end all wars was over, and the men came home to enthusiastic parades and parties. Families were reunited. The roar of the military machine changed to the Roaring Twenties. Euphoric relief came with the end of the war, the influenza epidemic, wartime shortages, and rationing. The new decade ushered in great changes. The boys who went overseas to fight came back as men who had seen a very different world. The battle-weary soldiers witnessed many technological advances in warfare: the machine gun, tank, submarine, airplane, and poison gas. The women who had shouldered the emotional and financial burdens of families at home had a new experience, too, that of independence. So many decades can be summed up by the famous quote from Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, quote, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times," end quote. The decade of the 1930s, sometimes called the Dirty Thirties because of unrelenting economic depression, drought, and blowing dirt, tested the strength of our state and nation. Although the Great Depression and drought took years to overcome, the resilience of the people once again rose above the circumstances. Section 1, The Roaring Twenties. As you read, look for the unrest that followed World War I, the Tulsa Race Riot, the ups and downs of Oklahoma's economy, and vocabulary terms: inflation, martial law, Ku Klux Klan, petrochemicals, barnstormer, partisan, and indict. A wide range of events unfolded in Oklahoma in the 1920s. The mineral industries grew. There were technological advancements in automobiles, aviation, communication, and household items. The older generation questioned the new values of the younger generation. Lawlessness and disorder were common in most of the country, and Oklahoma had its own share of labor fights, racial clashes, bank and train robberies, and mob whippings. Oklahoma's population in 1920 was 2,028,283. An increase from the 1910 count of 1,657,155. After World War I, the population began a trend of shifting from rural to urban areas, primarily as people searched for jobs. In 1910, 19% of the state's population was classified as urban, but by 1920, the number had climbed to 27%. Social unrest. The returning soldiers quickly turned their attention toward finding jobs and homes, both of which were in short supply. Oklahoma's agriculture and mineral industries, which had prospered during World War I, experienced downturns. Companies that had expanded to meet wartime contract orders had to cut back or shut down. Home construction that had been slowed by the war led to a housing shortage nationwide. A high demand for a short supply of consumer goods caused a period of inflation, an increase in the prices of goods and services, while purchasing power decreases. Many laborers demanded higher wages, and labor unions called for strikes. Streetcar workers in Chickasha and Sepulpa, telephone operators in Drumright, Shawnee, and Muskogee, boilermakers in Tulsa, and newspaper printers in Oklahoma City and Okmulgee used strikes to argue for better pay. coal miners who had earned $6 a day during the war watched their paychecks get smaller as wartime contracts ended. About 9,000 Oklahoma coal miners joined 450,000 miners nationwide in a strike November 1, 1919, when an agreement couldn't be reached for better hours and pay. Authorities declared martial law, a temporary use of military rule when civilian authority breaks down, in the area of trouble in eastern Oklahoma. The mining strike was settled in December and martial law was lifted. The Red Scare, or fear of communist takeover, that swept the country after the war caused many people to take quick action against anything that appeared to be anti-American. The unsettled times also led to the rebirth of the Ku Klux Klan, reorganized in 1915 with a white, native-born, Protestant supremacy agenda. Its members were anti-Catholic, anti-Jewish, anti-African-American, and opposed to immigration and labor unions. Klan membership began to grow in 1920. By 1921, its membership in Oklahoma was estimated to be 100,000. The Klan added to the general unrest of the time by enforcing its concept of morality with warnings, whippings, burning crosses, lynchings, and other acts of violence. Martial law was declared after one such beating of a man in Okmulgee and after mob violence in Tulsa. A 60-year-old German farmer near Broken Arrow was one target of the KKK's ethnic hatred. Two men were convicted for whipping the farmer, who was declared innocent of any offense against the peace and dignity of Tulsa County. The Tulsa Race Riot. One of the more prosperous African-American communities in the United States at this time was Greenwood, just north of downtown Tulsa. About 15,000 people lived in the thriving area known as the Black Wall Street of America. Two- and three-story brick buildings housed grocery stores, clothing and dry goods stores, billiard halls, beauty parlors, barber shops, a jewelry store, a photography studio, restaurants, and the second largest theater in Tulsa. No one knows exactly what happened on May 30, 1921 in Tulsa that led to one of the worst race riots in America. Dick Rowland, a 19-year-old African-American bootblack, shoeshine man, stepped into an elevator in a downtown Tulsa office building to go to a colored washroom. The white elevator operator was 17-year-old Sarah Page. Possibly, Rowland tripped as he stepped into the elevator and grabbed Page's arm to steady himself, or he may have stumbled into her as the elevator lurched. Startled, Page screamed and the frightened Rowland ran away. Rowland was arrested the next morning and taken to the Tulsa County Courthouse. The afternoon edition of the Tulsa Tribune carried news of the incident and talked of lynching the teenager who they suspected of assaulting the elevator operator. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, angry whites began gathering at the courthouse. By 7:30 p.m., several hundred had congregated. Many of them had guns. Willard McCullough, the Tulsa sheriff, tried unsuccessfully to calm the crowd. Several blacks gathered on Greenwood Avenue to discuss the situation, and some, armed with guns, went to the courthouse to support the sheriff. Rumors were flying. By 10 p.m., the first shot was fired, possibly by accident, but it triggered a quick response by the crowd. The white mob shot into the smaller group of blacks, who returned fire. The white mob, numbering almost 2,000, chased the African Americans toward Greenwood. The local National Guard began rounding up blacks and taking them to the armory. Panic erupted throughout the black community as those not fighting attempted to flee the city. By early morning on June 2nd, some whites began setting fires to businesses in Greenwood. When firemen arrived to put out the flames, they were kept away at gunpoint. By 5 a.m., there were about 5,000 rioters and they launched an all-out attack of shooting and looting. Some white Tulsans supported the blacks, but they were largely outnumbered. The Oklahoma National Guard troops from Oklahoma City finally arrived by train on June 2nd, and martial law was declared. Most surviving blacks had already fled the city or were in detention centers. The official count of the dead was 26 blacks and 13 whites, but other estimates placed the number of dead closer to 100 or 300. Some people reported bodies were dumped in the Arkansas River or buried in mass graves. Hundreds of people were injured. 35 square blocks of Greenwood were destroyed. No arrests were made for the loss of life and property, and Sarah Page refused to file charges against Dick Rowland. Many African Americans moved from Tulsa. Thousands who stayed lived in tents. The Greenwood community was eventually rebuilt, but it never achieved the status it held before the riot. Growth of the oil industry. Oklahoma's oil reserves had just begun to be tapped prior to the 1920s. After the war, the price of oil had dropped from $3.50 to 25 cents a barrel, but that had little effect on opening new fields. The tent town of Schidler was established after the development of the Burbank Field by Cosden, Phillips, Marland, Sinclair, and others. By the early 1920s, Oklahoma had become the leading oil producer in the nation. The Tonkawa and Three Sands oil fields were discovered in 1921, and the Greater Seminole Field further expanded the boom in the mid-1920s. The rich Seminole pools caused a glut on the market, and producers voluntarily slowed production. Some 20,000 workers flooded the Seminole area, and the railroad depot saw unprecedented traffic. Fields discovered in the Texas Panhandle and southwestern Kansas in the early 1920s led to a huge tri-state field that included the Oklahoma Panhandle. Output from the tri-state field slowed until a pipeline was completed to Chicago in 1931. The newspaper headline, "City Well Hurls Liquid Gold High Over Oil Derrick," was the headline in the Oklahoma City Times on December 4, 1928, when Discovery Well No. 1 was drilled by the Indian Territory Illuminating Oil Company, later Cities Service and Citgo. That first well in the rich field in southeastern Oklahoma City alone produced more than 1 million barrels of oil. In March 1930, the Wild Mary Sudik well roared into production, spewing oil 175 feet high, showering the area in oil. A crew of 100 men finally capped the well. A forest of derricks dotted the Oklahoma City landscape, with some even located on the state capitol grounds. The oil field became one of the 10 richest in the country. The first petrochemicals, chemicals derived from petroleum or natural gas, plant in the Southwest, was established at Talent in Osage County in 1926. Formaldehyde, preservative, and alcohols were the first chemicals processed at the plant. Later, petrochemicals were used in solvents, photographic chemicals, medical products, refrigerants, safety glass, adhesives, and disinfectants. During World War II, the plant focused on uses for petrochemicals for the war effort. A darker side of the oil boom resulted in the Osage Reign of Terror in the 1920s. At least 20 Osage Indians were murdered, including 10 members of the family of Lizzie Q. Kyle, as non-Indians schemed to inherit their riches. The FBI worked several years developing the case. The newly created Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation sent one of its three agents, Luther Bishop, to help investigate. Bishop was found murdered in his home the next year. Other industries. Coal production reached its peak in Oklahoma in 1920, yielding almost 5 million tons. mining of coal declined until after World War II, when it began to regain a share of the market. The zinc and lead mines of northeastern Oklahoma employed over 11,000 men during their peak production years of the mid-1920s. In 1927, 248 zinc and lead mines were operating in the state. During World War I, farmers were encouraged to plant more crops and raise more cattle and hogs for the war effort. With increased crop prices during the war, they were able to buy more land. By 1922, cotton was the most valuable cash crop in Oklahoma, and the state ranked fourth in the United States in cotton production. The supply was soon more than the demand, and farm prices started to tumble. Cotton fell from 34.6 cents a pound in 1920 to 7.2 cents a pound a year later. Wheat dropped from $1.42 to 85 cents a bushel. While other industries prospered in the 1920s, agriculture suffered. Some farmers went broke or lost their land. Several groups, such as the Farmers Union and the Farmer Labor Reconstruction League, campaigned for programs to help farmers. Mechanized farm equipment was slow to move into Oklahoma. Money was always an issue, and the size of the fields did not make the new tractors and equipment cost-effective. In addition, there was usually a good supply of migrant farm workers. In 1920, about 3% of Oklahoma farmers had tractors, but the number rose quickly by the end of the 1930s. The number of tractors reported statewide in 1928 was 18,260. In 1939, the number had jumped to 46,800, by which time the equipment had become essential to success. Aviation takes off. Interest in flying came early to Oklahoma. The first airport was built on flat farmland in Oklahoma City in 1910. The Henry Post Army Airfield was established at Fort Sill prior to World War I. Runways were flat grasslands, and sometimes buffalo wallows were filled in to make a usable landing ground. Many pilots returning from the war became barnstormers, pilots who gave airplane rides and flying and stunt exhibitions. In 1919, barnstormer Duncan A. McIntyre established the McIntyre Airport in Tulsa. In 1920, he created the Curtis Southwest Airplane Company. Tulsa's Municipal Airport and Spartan School of Aeronautics were opened in 1928. By 1930, over 70,000 passengers used the Tulsa Airport, making it one of the busiest in the world. Another barnstormer was Paul Braniff. In 1928, Braniff and his brother Tom bought a plane for $11,000 and established the Paul R. Braniff Incorporated Airline with flights between Oklahoma City and Tulsa. Tickets were $12.50 one way or $20 round trip. In addition to transporting people, Braniff also carried mail and delivered newspapers. Originally headquartered at the Curtis Wright Field in Oklahoma City, all of the Braniff operations were eventually moved to Dallas. Another world-famous aviator, Wiley Post, also used the Curtis Wright Field as his base and for his aircraft projects. Post grew up in southwestern Oklahoma, where at age 15 he saw his first airplane at a county fair. Post worked as a skydiver for a couple of years, then he took a job in the oil fields so he could earn enough money to buy an airplane. An accident in the oil fields left him with one eye and trouble with depth perception, a handicap he learned to overcome. With a $1,800 workers' compensation check, Post bought his first airplane. He made his living by giving flying lessons and exhibitions. In 1931, Post and navigator Harold Gaddy set a new record in a plane called the Winnie Mae, when they flew around the world in 8 days, 15 hours, and 51 minutes. 2 years later, Post beat his own record by 21 hours when he flew solo around the world. Believing that flying in high altitude would improve airspeed, Post invented a pressure suit that allowed him to breathe and survive the higher flight. To prove his theory, Post flew 340 miles per hour in 1934, one-third faster than the normal maximum airspeed of the day. Airports were built at Guthrie, Chickasha, Ponca City, Bartlesville, Muskogee, and Winoka as communities sought to keep pace with the changing world. Motoring. The automobile and the moving assembly line had a tremendous impact on the American economy and lifestyle in the 1920s. Car sales went through the roof, and auto touring became popular as campsites and gasoline stations were built. By 1929, some 23 million cars were registered in America. Tulsa booster Cyrus Avery was elected president of the Associated Highways of America in 1921. In 1924, he was named to the Oklahoma Highway Commission, and in 1925, to the U.S. Agriculture Department's Bureau of Public Roads. Congress wanted a road from Virginia to California across the middle of the country. Avery suggested that, to avoid the high peaks of the Rocky Mountains, the road should turn southwest through Tulsa and Oklahoma City and then head west. After much discussion, the route was agreed upon and the road was designated U.S. 66 on November 11, 1926. The road ran from Chicago to Los Angeles and connected in Springfield, Missouri, with Route 60 from Virginia Beach. Avery nicknamed U.S. 66 the Main Street of America. To bring attention to Route 66, a 3,422-mile transcontinental foot race, the Bunyan Derby, was held. On March 4, 1928, 275 runners left the starting line at Los Angeles, hoping to win the $25,000 prize. Andy Payne of Foyil, Oklahoma, was one of the few who survived the grueling race. Payne, part Cherokee Indian, was the first to cross the New York finish line on May 26th, winning the longest race in America. He used the prize money to pay off the mortgage on his family's farm. Life was good. Life was good for most Americans. Dance marathons featured the Charleston, the shimmy, and foxtrot. Fashions included loose-cut, shorter dresses, and raccoon coats. The favorite silent movie was The Sheik, starring Rudolph Valentino, and in 1927, the first feature-length talking motion picture, The Jazz Singer, was made. Trumpeter Louis Satchmo Armstrong launched the jazz age. Roller skating, cross-country races, mahjong, and crossword puzzles were popular, and flagpole sitting was the fad of the day. Household appliances were appearing to make life easier. Towns of all sizes had vaudeville and movie theaters or opera houses. Many were very ornate. Mining magnate George Coleman spent $600,000 in 1929 to build the Coleman Theater in Miami. The Okmulgee Hippodrome Theater and Opera House, which opened in 1921, had a swimming pool in the basement and a ballroom on the second floor. George Pollard converted what was a dry goods store in Guthrie into a vaudeville house in 1919, calling it the Pollard Theater. The Pollard was remodeled later for silent films and then talkies. The Art Deco Art Nouveau style Liberty Theater, opened in 1915 in Carnegie, is the oldest continuing running theater in Oklahoma. Radio had as much impact on America as did the automobile. The listeners were few when the first radio broadcast was made from Pittsburgh in 1920, but by 1923, 556 stations were transmitting across the country. Earl Hull of Oklahoma City received a federal license in 1921, and station WKY began broadcasting in 1922, the first station west of the Mississippi River and the third in the United States. Radio stations soon followed in Tulsa, Yale, Okemah, Ardmore, Norman, Chickasha, Bristow, Muskogee, and Fort Sill. By 1923, some 400,000 radios had been sold across America. People could hear news instantly rather than reading about it days later. Entertainment was brought into the home with such radio programs as Fibber McGee and Molly. Ideas, information, propaganda, and political and religious messages were broadcast to thousands. Oklahoma's own Will Rogers was a natural for radio. His down-home charm, wit, and insight endeared him to the nation. The entertainer and homespun philosopher moved from rope tricks in the Wild West shows to vaudeville, and then to writing for newspapers. Radio provided Rogers an even better way to humorously comment on the issues of the day and on prominent people. Politics. Mary Alice Robertson, the daughter of missionaries, became the first woman elected to the U.S. House of Representatives from Oklahoma. On June 20, 1921, she presided over the House for 30 minutes, the first woman in the country to do so. Robertson, a Republican from Muskogee, served one term, losing the election in 1922. Politics were turbulent in the 1920s in Oklahoma. Democrats won the majority of seats in both houses of the legislature, and John C. Walton was elected governor by a wide margin. Walton's term began with a huge barbecue for the common man, but it ended 10 months later with impeachment. Walton clashed with conservatives as well as some prominent liberals and radicals on a number of issues. He attempted to build partisan, strong, biased political backing support by appointing new members to several boards, but that angered many people. Newspapers criticized his use of martial law and his leniency for prisoners. They called for his impeachment. Walton was impeached on 22 counts and convicted of 11. He was ousted in November 1923. One law passed during Walton's term provided free textbooks to public schools. That law excluded textbooks that taught Darwin's theory of evolution over the biblical theory. Oklahoma became the first state to essentially prohibit teaching evolution in public schools. Other states soon followed with similar laws. When Tennessee's law passed in 1925, the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, offered to defend any teacher willing to test the case. John T. Scopes, a Tennessee biology teacher, was indicted, charged with a crime, and brought to trial. This national media event featured two of the greatest orators of the time, past presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan for the prosecution and Clarence Darrow for the defense. After 8 days of testimony, the jurors ruled that Scopes had taught evolution in a Tennessee classroom. The judge had refused to hear testimony on whether Scopes had a right to teach evolution. Scopes was fined $100, but that decision was later overturned by the Tennessee Supreme Court. It's your turn. Number one, what incident apparently started the Tulsa race riot? Number two, where were Oklahoma's first airports? Number three, what was the significance of Route 66?